Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable
absolutely
talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And welcome to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR. My name is Jay Moran, host for the next hour of the program, coming up this Friday. As a matter of fact, another Juneteenth celebration, part of the federal holiday, Juneteenth celebration. With us to talk about it and give some perspective, Dr. Marcus Watson, Associate Professor of Africana Studies at Buffalo State University. Dr. Watson, thank you very much for joining us once again on What's Next.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
It is great to have you, and we always appreciate your perspective. And I want to just start off with this concept, because you brought it up, and I think it is very fitting in a lot of ways. One, obviously, Juneteenth is upon us. It'll be here in a couple of days, but we're also seeing in a variety of places across the region, across the country, the America 250 celebration. So that's July 4th, 1776, that's being marked. And on June 19th, it'll be marking June 19th, 1865, and the original Juneteenth. As you said, it was your thought to bring this to contrast to a discussion here. What do you see? What stands out to you when you think about those two dates?
Well, I think about Africana Studies, first of all, which is a perspective. And we try to be very clear about that, because we're not history, we're not slavery. Those things factor into the discipline, but fundamentally we are a perspective. So when students, community members hear from us, we try to make it clear you're coming with your perspective or perspectives, and you are going to gain another one, right? I say all that to say the mainstream perspective, I would say, is that July 4th, 1776 is a great leap forward for the country and perhaps for humankind. And that comes from a certain perspective. With Africana Studies, it's not that we totally reject that perspective, but we understand it as that. And we offer an alternative perspective, which is based on what did it look like for African people and indigenous people, women, and so forth. So in short, what it looked like was when the 13 colonies fight the British and gain independence July 4th, 1776, they brought with them into this new independent country roughly 400,000 enslaved Africans as their property, chattel. Not a great leap forward from that perspective, right? And so, again, the idea is not that anyone's supposed to feel guilt or shame or blame, but it's a concerted effort, a principled commitment to understanding the full picture. And so for those who are interested in the full picture, right, this might be interesting, you know. July 4th, 1776, 400,000 enslaved Africans dragged into the newly independent country. I mean, we might ask the audience, would they think that is a great leap forward for African people? If you add to that, that by the time you get to the start of the Civil War, 1861, there are now 4 million enslaved Africans. So just putting those two dates and those two numbers together, I think it is analytically sound to say that the intervening years did not represent a great leap forward for African people. To the extent that those intervening years also had the settlers moving west by force, moving indigenous people off of their lands, exterminating them in some cases. California and Texas stand out in that regard. I think it's analytically sound to say it was not a great leap forward for indigenous people either.
Right.
You know, so that those are my first sorts of thoughts.
And the irony, I guess, of sorts would be that there would be a sense or maybe a quick to put a tag or a trademark on America 250 as a celebration of freedom. Right. But it wasn't freedom for everybody, not even close.
It was not, and yet and still, there's not a rejection, you know, of July 4th, 1776. We're big-hearted enough to know that it meant a lot to a lot of people.
Certainly.
You know, and that at this point, we are all thrown in the mix together, and we're trying to make the best of it, and specifically to see if we can make the lofty ideals, you know, that we find in the founding documents, relevant and applicable to all people, right? So we still have a stake, you know, in that. But it's hard to have July 4th, 1776 be the only Independence Day celebration if you know, as an African descended person, how it started for your ancestors. By contrast, Juneteenth is unequivocal about the humanity, you know, of African people and the, for lack of a better term, the God-given right to be free human beings.
You know? Reflecting on, let's maybe bring it out into the last couple of years when it comes to Juneteenth, the fact that it became a federal holiday. What were your thoughts about it, if you can reflect, or perhaps some of the conversations maybe that you had, that this holiday now, I would say it happened compared to a lot of things that happened on the federal level. And I think 1776 to 1865 is a good barometer of how that could be measured. But the Juneteenth holiday, the federal holiday, was relatively quickly approved and became part of the law of the land. What were some, maybe if you can reflect, thoughts on that as that was happening?
My thoughts would have been something like, it's about time. Happy that it's happened, even if belatedly, because it gives hope that we all count, we all matter. It feels good to be seen and recognized, especially by your own country, because I think we don't give it enough thought that when you're a citizen of a place, in this case, American, it's supposed to mean that's your place. You know, that's the place you live, you work. It's the place where you feel belonging, supported, protected. And for a people to be citizens nominally of a place and yet somehow pretty regularly feeling the ire and hatred, you know, from other members of that country that's also supposed to be yours is a strange experience indeed. Yeah, but I was very happy to hear about it. It it was something of a miracle.
I was going to ask, were you surprised?
Yeah, I was surprised, but I was surprised and not surprised.
Okay.
It was a miracle to me in the sense that, in the same way, the whole world is dancing to hip hop music, right? By descendants of enslaved Africans, some from the US, some from Jamaica, for, you know, the history of hip hop. When we know historically, African ancestors were brought here to be transformed from human beings into property. And like property, we're supposed to have no rights and to be willing to be moved about and treated anyhow, like a couch or a chair, without standing up for oneself. So to go from that to the whole world is dancing to the music, you know, of the descendants of those African ancestors is a miracle. I think it speaks to the cultural brilliance of African cultures generally, of African people. And in the same light, we have now the ability for the whole nation to recognize Juneteenth, you know, which is the independence celebration for African people from bondage. So a miracle in that sense. Not surprised in the sense that to know African cultures and African people, the cultural brilliance, the resilience, the love, community, we keep doing these things despite it all. So not surprised that we pulled something like that off, but miraculous, right, nonetheless.
But I was also thinking about how, like you said, there was this backlash of hatred. That's, you know, I suppose we could debate whether or not it's at the root of the fact that all those years went on, whatever the case may be. I don't necessarily want to get into it, but I'm thinking of that hatred existed, still exists, maybe on a larger, smaller scale, whatever. Again, that's a whole other discussion on that. But the fact that for once on the federal level, there was a breakthrough in that, at least, I don't know, I'll ask your opinion. Did you feel it was temporary? I mean, not, obviously the holidays here, but there was a breakthrough in that backlash that always seemed to be so strong when it comes to making legislation on a federal level that is focused on some sort of equality.
Right. I mean, especially in the context of efforts at the federal level to erase certain gains, you know, civil rights gains in particular, you know, the gutting of the Voting Rights Act, for example, you know, taking away of many of the guaranteed, you know, rights that came with the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So that's part of the context, which makes it surprising that the federal government chose to recognize Juneteenth, but also in the predictable conservative backlash against gains arguably made by the Black Lives Matter movement more recently.
Right.
So for Juneteenth to be recognized in that context, it's interesting to say the least. You know, is it a sign of the country finally getting it that we're all human beings? And the point is not to make everyone the same, but to appreciate the different kind of flowers we are, right? Is it that's the hope? Or similar to the way conservative monies in the late 1960s and early 1970s were used to develop hundreds of Black studies programs, quick and all of a sudden. Historians would say now to ameliorate the uprising, right, of protest and progressive action, right? You know, so those monies were sort of said, here, be quiet. And there were conditions placed on how Black studies should be taught them. That's a different matter. But there's a historical reference point to make it a legitimate question, at least, to ask what was the motivation behind, right, the federal government recognizing, establishing Juneteenth this time. Again, is it really part of we're getting somewhere as a country, which is the hope, or is it a way to allay, fears that, you know, too much transformation or too much change toward equality, mind you, might be happening. And clearly, everyone in the country doesn't value that in the same way. The fact that over 70 million American citizens voted for the 47th president, the current president, is telling, because that's more than the 1%. You know, we can't keep quote unquote blaming everything on the top, 1% wealthy white elite. Clearly there's class collaboration happening, right? Middle class, working class, to get that many votes.
We're talking with Professor Marcus Watson, Associate Professor of Africana Studies at Buffalo State University, giving us some perspective on Juneteenth. You definitely ventured into the area that I want to talk about. And just that, was making Juneteenth a federal holiday a sign of progress or changing of attitudes? I think you've already kind of expressed it to a certain extent. That there was progress being made, real progress, and that there was a general, maybe a growing acceptance of, like you said, the flowers that we all bring to this country. You're an Africana studies professor, so I'm asking you a little bit more about, American political thought, but your thoughts on that. Do you sense that there has been gains in that regard, or are we maybe seeing a drift back to a certain extent?
Well, I think it's a little of both. I think they go together. I think when there are certain gains made from the perspective, from an Africana perspective, I like to emphasize that it's a perspective. You usually see a white backlash or a conservative backlash against those kinds of gains. We see it in many instances throughout history. Of relevance to this discussion, let's go back to the Civil War and 1865 with the 13th Amendment to the Constitution abolishing slavery. You know, some of us would say that's a gain, right? I certainly would. It's an Africana studies perspective. I think most reasonable people would say we got rid of slavery, except in the case of prison, okay, if you know the language of the 13th Amendment. But generally, I think a lot of reasonable people would say that was a good step in the evolution of the country. In the same year, however, was the establishment of the Ku Klux Klan, right? Again, an example of a conservative backlash, telling the federal government at the time, you may have legislated the freedom for Black folks in this case, and legislated a road to equality, regardless of skin color, background, gender, and so forth. But we're not having it, right? Good luck implementing that on the ground. Another example is Brown versus Board of Education, 1954. again, I think most reasonable people, people who count themselves as kind and good and loving of all people, who disregard those kinds of discriminations against people for superficial differences of skin color and those kinds of things, would say that Brown versus Board was a good moment in U.S. history. With Brown versus Board, we have the undoing of racial segregation. Okay. In that same year, however, we have the development of the White Citizens Council in Mississippi, but it spreads through many southern states. And the idea was the same as the idea of the KKK all those years ago, which is you may have legislated the country into taking on a more equal and just kind of culture, but good luck executing that on the ground level. So the examples can go on and on.
Sure.
But let's move forward to now and your question.
Yeah.
Because I think we're seeing something similar. It's being replayed over and over again. And it makes that point that certain kinds of quote unquote gains, again, from an Africana perspective, from my, everyone doesn't want it or we wouldn't vote the way we vote and these things wouldn't be happening. So I think we have to be very clear, you know, that even though we may be in a room of like-minded people, there's probably a room to the left or right of people who don't agree with it, you know, and, sure. and we have to come to terms with that.
Right.
Right. So again, so we have the election of Barack Obama, right? First acknowledged anyway, a black president of the country, still waiting on a woman president. Okay. You know, some of us thought that was a great sign that the United States might get it and realize its great potential. But the day after he was elected, I'm going to forget the name of the church. It was in the Northeast, but it was burnt. It was a black church burned to the ground, right? Obviously as a sign of protest. That backlash that we talked about. This was the rise of the alt-right and conservative forces that, among other things, were trying to make sure none of his legislation would pass or very little of it. This was the era of videoed violent police encounters with black individuals, therefore the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement. And that brought a lot of attention to the country for what black people are going through. And out of that came diversity, equity, and inclusion. And against that backdrop came a conservative backlash, including trying to eradicate things like Africana studies, DEI programming, and maybe ultimately electing someone on a platform that supports that kind of backlash. So all that to say, do I think, given all of that, that we're making real progress? I still would say yes. I would say yes. I think this conservative backlash is symptomatic of the real progress that they saw being made. And it frightened them and organized them, and it brought them to the White House. And they are trying to undo, you know, many of the gains. But I would like to hope that it's too late, you know, do what they will. There's especially a new generation of young people who listen to the same kinds of music, dress in similar ways, speak in similar ways. And I may say it's inflected or influenced by hip hop, that's doing that bringing together of people. I think they don't want a world, many of them, most of them, significant number of them, where they can't know, trust, love, work with, socialize with people of all backgrounds. I think they're tired of it. And they have a sense of justice collectively may be beyond what we've seen before for a generation across diverse lines.
Just a note from our executive producer, Charles Gilbert, Macedonian Church of Christ and God, I believe, is what the church that you were referencing that was burned after the election of Barack Obama as president.
Thank
you. We're going to take a time out. We're going to come back with more. We're talking with Dr. Marcus Watson of Buffalo State University, our discussion centering on Juneteenth, but also getting some reflection on not only its significance, but its roots as well. There's a lot to talk about here. We're going to get back to it right after this break. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to the program. With us, Dr. Marcus Watson, Associate Professor of Africana Studies at Buffalo State University. We're talking about Juneteenth. We're getting into some nice, I think important conversations about Juneteenth and kind of comparing it to America's celebration of its own independence in 1776 that did not exist for all people who were residing inside this country at that time. I wanted to get back just for a moment. I feel like I'm, in a way, maybe taking you outside of your area of expertise, but I appreciate the perspective. When it comes to this conservative backlash, and you expressed the fact, and I thought you did a great job of expressing an optimistic note of sorts that there are people all over this world who are celebrating the brilliance of Black culture, as you say, through hip hop. And that's most certainly a positive. But then there is this conservative backlash that has elected a president, it seems, who has enjoyed success, I think, because of a lot of these attitudes. I'm wondering how much time, and if you have some perspective on that, the roots of that backlash, though. Is it purely formed out of hatred? Is it that simple to say that? Is there more to it? I've appreciated your perspective that you've given us on a lot of these topics already this morning, and I'm wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's almost surely more complicated than just hatred, but that's a key ingredient because there are, in my estimation, this might be kind of philosophical, but it's definitely under an Africana umbrella. There are different expressions of love. You know, in a book I have under contract that's going to be coming out soon on Black psychology, for example, I talk about a 0 = 1 sort of subconscious formulation that human beings can be socialized into. And 0 = 1 essentially means that for me to feel like a whole person or a whole people, a one, I have to reduce someone else to a 0. Mm. And that is not a universal approach to loving. You know, that's loving oneself or feeling good about oneself based on putting someone else down. I grew up with my parents saying, "Marcus, you're as good as the best, no better than the rest. You're as good as the best, no better than the rest." And that points to another form of that love can take, which I call 2 = 1, which means that fundamentally life comes in pairs, you know, whether it is man, woman, sky, earth, north, south, but together they make a whole. So it takes 2 to make 1. And that kind of goes with that expression of you're as good as the best, no better than the rest. Okay. So that kind of hatred is an ingredient that to feel like, I don't know if it's the chosen people, or to feel like whiteness is somehow the one and only valuable thing in the world, right? Required that kind of reducing of someone else to a 0. Now, I think many groups of people, including poorer whites, I would say, and white women, have felt the sting of that kind of approach to feeling good about oneself or one's people. But I would dare say that no one has felt it, you know, quite like African people, you know, who were brought here. Indigenous people as well, you know, cannot be forgotten. But to go back to context, I think it helps to understand 1776 again from an African point of view. So when we try to look at that moment in history and we look around it to see what it meant for African people, we go 4 years prior to that.
Okay.
1772 in Britain. The mother country, right? It's still the 13 colonies at this time. It took 4 more years in 1776 in a war to gain independence. But 4 years prior to that, 1772 in Britain, there was a court case called Somerset versus Stuart. And that case abolished slavery in Britain. Fearing that what happens in the mother country will be applied to the colonies. And a very under-remarked variable for why that war of independence was fought was to preserve the way of life, you know, at the base of which was the enslavement of African people. And this has been used quite a bit historically, declaring independence to keep something going that was about to be abolished or eradicated and so forth. So we enter our history as an independent country with that foremost in mind. How do we preserve the enslavement of African people in perpetuity? Because at that point, centuries had passed and apparently the settlers, the European settlers, had gained an addiction to the wealth and the lifestyle, you know, that came with this free labor. But fast forward to 1836, you have the Texas War of Independence against Mexico. Several years before that, 1829, Mexico abolishes enslavement. 1829, under the leadership of an African descended president, by the way, Vicente Guerrero. Okay, it took us how many centuries to get our first black president? So we want to keep those kind of things in mind.
Sure, sure.
But when we talk about it was a great leap forward. There were certain material gains, of course, you know, but we're still working on things as a country. So anyway, in order for the white settlers of Texas, which at that time was a colony of Mexico, okay, in order for them to continue the enslavement of African people and the enrichment of themselves, based on that, they fight a war of independence and back out in the same way that the 13 colonies backed out of Britain. Now you have in 1836, Texas backing out of Mexico to preserve the enslavement of African people forevermore. That lasts until they become an independent country, you know, pretty much 1836 to 1845, until there are international pressures that make it better for them to back themselves into the United States as a slave state. The Civil War is all about that, right? You have a whole section of the country that is willing to fight to the death to preserve the enslavement of African people. And it includes declaring independence in 1861 and so forth. Fast forward to 1965, Zimbabwe, you have the white settlers there do the same thing, a unilateral declaration of independence, because the mother country, Britain, was letting its colonies go and they were becoming independent. Zimbabwe used, in fact, there's language when you study the history where they say they were replaying 1776. It was an inspiration for them to do that. Let's declare independence so that we can continue essentially enslaving, but colonizing, forced labor and that kind of thing. The Africans of Zimbabwe in perpetuity, you know. So now we get to current times. And now you have I hope a better picture of the founding of the country, what it was based on. You know, African people were brought here for one reason and one reason only, and that was to generate wealth for the elite European settlers. And of course, that spilled over into all kinds of industries across classes who benefited from that. And so we find that as long as African descended people are carrying out their historic mission of doing nothing other than creating wealth for other people, then that's the equivalent of staying in our place, doing what we were brought here to do, and therefore we're being good, right? Within a historical cultural framework that was laid down a long time ago and fought for literally, you know, right, over the centuries.
Right.
So when we have something like the Black Lives Matter movement, you have Black people moving out of their place and daring to stand up straight, daring to be counted as equals. That's not what you were brought here for, you know? And so it should be predictable at this point that there will be a conservative backlash. Now, is it hatred? It's not just that, but I think it is. It's a formula. It's a formula for making obnoxious amounts of wealth. And unfortunately for some people, it's based on their negation.
Right? And now what occurs to me that this statement, and again, I'll just ask you to react or dismiss, but the idea that capitalism is, again, portrayed to a certain extent, a system of freedom, free trade. Mm. But is it as much, when we look at the history of Blacks and Africans in this country? I mean, can we say maybe that it's the exact opposite?
Yeah, I think that's the point. You know, there are obviously a lot of people who swear by it, live by it, wouldn't have it any other way. And I think we're at a time when we have to, it's important to acknowledge that, right? 70 plus million people voting in a certain direction is not something to sneeze at, right? It's something, whether you agree or disagree, to take very seriously. But again, from an Africana perspective, which essentially asks us to take off the lenses that we have on, or maybe we were socialized into, and to replace them, at least for a moment, with an Africana studies lens, and to see what do some of the same things you've heard about look like when you look at it from African people's experiences. And like you said, capitalism arguably was made possible based on the free labor of African people, but also the confiscation of indigenous people's lands, land and labor, right? Had to be exploited and expropriated to make this whole thing work. And what it looks like through the centuries, right up to today, is that same kind of pattern is in place, right? So, yeah, and not to say that socialism or communism are any better.
No, that wasn't the point. Right.
I don't think so. I think, if anything, what we've lost as African descended people is African cultural heritage. And what did labor look like then? What did occupying land look like then? I think that that was something that was lost, and it's understandable to in some regard. If I'm an enslaved person and I'm considered property, then I know the world I'm living in has me as property, and across the line, it has people who are property owners. And if those are my two choices, I want to be on that side.
Sure.
You know,
right.
I want to be on that side. And that includes popular, understandable ideas to this day that tells Black folks, you have to own property. You know, you can't be renters forever. There's no wealth in that. You're creating wealth for others. There's wealth in property ownership, right? So we're locked into, I would argue, we're locked into a Eurocentric worldview, you know, which is related to capitalism, of course. But what we have forgotten is what this all would have looked like prior to being forcibly, you know, shipped across the Atlantic in the millions, you know, to labor for free for others.
Going to take another time out. We'll come back and finish up our discussion with Dr. Marcus Watson, Associate Professor of Africana Studies at Buffalo State University. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. I'm Jay Moran, your host, Dr. Marcus Watson with us today as we're reflecting on Juneteenth. And I really have appreciated this conversation about that, with some of the different elements that we've gotten into, and we've gone off on some, I hope, our enlightening philosophical regards, and like Dr. Watson has pointed out more than once, from an Africana perspective, because that is what Africana studies is a perspective. But at the same time, Buffalo State is going to maybe get a little bit more on the ground when it comes to Juneteenth here in Buffalo. The Buffalo Juneteenth celebration is, I mean, it's nationally renowned. There's no doubt about it. It's and it has done remarkably well here in the city. It's a huge celebration every year. But what do you see about a partnership between Buffalo State and the Buffalo Juneteenth celebration?
Thank you for asking that. Yeah, we've just started talking about a possible partnership between Buffalo's Juneteenth Festival and Africana Studies at Buffalo State. We obviously have similar, you know, things like trying to preserve knowledge of African history, culture, and especially of African descended people in this country. And so, again, we're just starting those conversations. Brother Raz Jomo and myself and Dr. Torrey in philosophy at Buffalo State, just getting that started, hoping to do what we do in Africana Studies, or one of the things we do, which is to make sure that students studying with us can apply what they're learning in the real world. Okay, that's one of the distinguishing features of Africana Studies, is that it's not and cannot be just purely academic. We have, don't get me wrong, the highest academic standards. We want all the brightest students. We want to heal the world, you know. And so we are organizing to see how some of our students can work, either voluntarily work with the Juneteenth committee, or maybe get internship credit for doing so, starting in the fall, going through the whole academic year, and then being able to say that they, and through those students, Africana Studies, and through Africana Studies, Buffalo State, you know, played a significant role in executing the next Juneteenth. At this previous one, I should say that Buffalo State was represented as a float, you know, in the parade. So we're involved that way. But yeah, you know, we're excited about something that, as you said, is one of the most renowned Juneteenth celebrations in the country, and something that is a cultural rallying point for diverse African descended people. If you're there and you see all the floats, you have all kinds of different ideologies, organizations, and so forth, who feel at one at that moment in Buffalo, right? So it has that kind of powerful impact. It's embracing the diversity even within, you know, Black folks. And of course, there's a lot of that.
It's hard to really say what this partnership is going to look like, but at the same time, part of what we're here for is to make this a better world. Do you see the potential there? I mean, because there is something very special about being part of the Juneteenth celebration here in Buffalo. There is power in that gathering of people, the massive gathering of people, people celebrating all sorts of different elements, whether they're, you know, like you said, on a float, or just people out in their traditional corner watching the parade go by.
Yeah, I think healing is a word that should be attached to Africana Studies, and perhaps to African cultures more generally, an expression of which is Juneteenth, you know. But we find ourselves uniquely positioned at a university, for example, not just Buffalo State, but at probably all universities. Whereas the goal of many of the departments and programs and disciplines, and just the universities and colleges generally, is to plug young people into the system. Where does healing come from that? You know, to the extent that we are riddled with all kinds of insidious divisions, you know, where we feel like we're supposed to put man over woman, intellect over emotion, humanity over earth, straight over gay, white over Black. We, African cultures generally operate by that 2 = 1, you know, type of thing. So when we see that one half of the pair has been severed, and not only that, but subordinated under the other one, without necessarily consciously seeing it this way, I think African culture is such, and probably indigenous cultures generally, whether it's indigenous America or wherever in the world, whatever works on a 2 = 1 basis, that is an affront. Those divisions are an affront to the wisdoms of our cultures, where we know that there's no reason that love should not be given to both sides, you know, of the pairing. And so, yes, we, in Africana Studies, for example, we have graduates who get jobs. So, you know, we're not against jobs. You got to have jobs.
Right.
Because we do produce strategic-minded, critically informed, culturally competent, ethically minded individuals who would be good for just about anybody's workforce, you know, hardworking people. But we also emphasize that getting plugged into a job or being trained to do that without also learning what it means to feel good at the job and love yourself at the job and love everyone at the job is only doing half of what needs to be done. And so that healing is important. There are examples in popular culture of this happening, I would submit. For example, the popular one, in Black culture, when we say you bad, you know, it's more than Black folks just being creative or contrary, right? It's an African-based culture that sees a world that has been divided into a hierarchy of good and bad and wonders why the bad doesn't also get some love, you know? So you bad, you know, bring it back, right? And give some love to both sides of things, you know? So that's that two equals one, you know, kind of subconscious force, right? That is still with us. Africana Studies is about that. Juneteenth, certainly, right? That Juneteenth is about, it's not a negation of July 4th, as we said, but it's why is it the one, but our Freedom Day has to be subordinated, right? It's about one plus one make a whole, right? Two make a one. And so it's about bringing love back to the discarded side of the dichotomy, right? So that's what we mean by healing. And, you know, for those of us who think that there's too much hatred, too much division, too much distrust, loneliness, depression, and so forth. Africana Studies is at least one source for trying to heal.
Our time is up, but I wanted to just, I'd like to believe that we have captured people's curiosity here.
Okay.
Somebody wanted a place that somebody could go to find out more, something to maybe continue this discussion, because you continue to, you know, these mathematic formulas mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. that are just intriguing to really think about. And as you have done a real nice job of taking us into considering that, where would you send someone for that?
Well,
I mean, besides your classroom, only can get so many people in there.
Right. I was going to say the classroom. I mean, I would just generally recommend if this applies to you and if you haven't already, move outside of your perhaps isolated social space and cross lines. That were put in place to divide us, but they don't have to. And just be intentional about going to events that may come out of the Black community, for example. Try to socialize, try to remake the dominant, I would say the dominant imagination in this country at this time of Black people, which arguably, it, you know, makes us think of criminal, you know, or morally debased or these other negative things. Because it's dangerous for anyone to live in a place where you're imagined that way. So if you know you're not that person, you know you were raised to respect and love all people, but you're getting mixed messages through media, usually, not actually knowing anyone about another group of people. In this case, we're talking about Black folks. Do the self-reflective, willful work of your own to try to disbelieve those things, cross the lines, go to events you might not go to, get to know people, stay open-minded, I'm quite sure you'll be welcomed with open arms.
Well stated, and thank you very much, Dr. Watson, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Marcus Watson, Associate Professor of Africana Studies at Buffalo State University. This has been What's Next, a Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.